Age is not a measurement for wisdom. Just the same way experience is not a measurement for competence. That you have been in an office or an official role for 20 years does not even mean you know anything. What do you need to do to be in an official role for 20 years? It's just to ensure that you are not sacked. That's all. If you are good with emotional intelligence, you know how to manage people. Because there are people that you need to give hot for them to do more. There are people who you just need to give them room, space, and then they realize, oh, I've disappointed the boss. There are people who you need to give query, document your disappointment, and they are going to change. But you wouldn't know all this if you are not emotionally smart. So emotional intelligence is great.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Modern Workplace Conversations, where we explore critical and often underdiscussed topics within the professional world. Every week, we feature experts ranging from HR professionals to operators to lawyers and CEOs to provide you with diverse perspectives on workplace issues, trends, and best practices. I'm Oluwanifemi Kolawole, Senior Editor, TechPoint Africa. Initiating and handling difficult conversations in the workplace are both unavoidable and essential for maintaining a healthy and productive environment. These conversations can involve pay and benefits, performance issues, or even inappropriate behaviors. Joining me to discuss how to master having uncomfortable conversations in the workplace is Lanre Basamta, a seasoned expert with nearly 2 decades of experience in tech, business, and marketing. He shares insights on developing the right skills to handle difficult situations and enhancing the level of competence befitting every C-suite executive, people leader, and manager at every level. Lanre is the CEO and co-founder at Optimus AI Labs and has held key leadership roles at reputable Nigerian companies like Interswitch, Cellulant Nigeria, Sidmark Technologies, and System Specs. Let's get into the conversation. Hi, Lanre. Thank you for joining me once again on this conversation. And I'm really excited by the topic we'll be talking about today. And I'm really sure that our audience would also want to hear about this because it is something that was rift between employees and employers. Some employees that are even very valuable to the companies have been let go because this have not been resolved. And that is the issue of having difficult conversation workplace. Difficult conversations might sound straightforward, but I would like you, being a person that have been in the career space for over 2 decades and I've had to deal with different people with different characters, with different ways of approaching work, and you have to get values from these people. So, in your own context, how would you describe difficult conversations in the workplace?
I mean, maybe the right way to look at difficult conversations is in the context of the name. Conversations that are not friendly. They are not woven around work responsibilities and tasks. Conversations that speaks to the pressing and personalities of people and not just about their work. Conversations that impact on the quality and quantity of people's outputs. I don't think anybody will consider conversations around the weather difficult. Hey, today is a cloudy day or today is a sunny day, right? And I don't think many people will say, oh, you're looking amazing today. I love the shoes you're wearing. People wouldn't consider that difficult. Or, I mean, I'm happy to tell you that you've just been promoted. Those are cool conversations to have. But when you start talking about people's work attitudes, when you start maybe questioning or forcing people to look at themselves honestly about the quality of their work, maybe when you are giving feedback and not many people love feedbacks, or maybe where there's conflict and you are trying to manage the conflict. Those are the kind of, if you ask me, those are the kind of things I'll call difficult conversations.
So, are you of the opinion that all difficult conversations are negative?
I mean, no. I wouldn't think that at all. Not all difficult conversations are negative. If anything, there is no difficult conversations that is negative. It is actually the way it is delivered, the way it is navigated, and maybe the personalities of the people involved. I mean, there are no conversations by themselves that are difficult. Even if they are negative, even if you have to fire somebody, for example, it could be for the benefit of the person and the organization. It could be a necessary decision that you have to take that is not linked to the person's output. And so it doesn't mean that it is negative in and of itself. How you deliver the conversation or how you navigate it amongst the persons involved will largely determine how it is ultimately perceived and what impact it has with the person hearing and the person giving. I mean, that's how I see it.
Hmm. So I want to give a scenario now. Say, okay. There is this manager that, okay, you are new to this workplace, not you, like there's a new talent that is just been hired, and then person was assigned to a manager, and the manager, the way they give feedback is not very kind to that person. So fine, the person is new on that job, but that person actually works with maybe three other people that are older colleagues, are superiors, but only this one person gives very caustic, caustic feedback. And then the talent approached that manager and like, I don't think you're giving constructive feedback. Your feedback is affecting my morale, it's affecting my self-esteem. And the manager went, I don't want to have that conversation with you now. How would you describe that? Because sometimes some managers feel having those difficult conversations are not supposed to be, so they try to avoid it by just throwing it off, like they don't want to talk about it. How would you describe that happening in the workplace?
Okay, so I mean, the scenario you've played out is a mixture of many things. So I say this because I get invited to speak a lot, and some of the things I speak about is actually workplace issues. And the first thing that I do is to defend the managers, and people think I'm crazy. Okay, and I say that because I was in one of those camps where I thought that my line manager, my boss, was a bastard. Okay. I actually thought that the guy was unempathetic, was a bad people manager, he was just a slave driver. And I was one of those persons who just think that this guy is unfit to be my boss. Okay. And it is when I became a manager that I frankly became exactly like him, that it occurred to me that managers by themselves are a product of how they've been brought up. That this manager who you think because he has worked for 10, 15 years should by now know how to manage people may be severely undertrained and terribly unskilled for the work of management. Okay? And so the first thing that I say is you need to first look at the manager to see how skilled is he in management, particularly in people management, and how skilled he is in things like communication, engaging people and all that. I struggle incredibly with managing people. And the basis for my struggle was I just couldn't understand why people couldn't operate on my level in terms of delivery, in terms of expectations. And the only way I could interpret this was either people were sloppy, lazy, or simply unskilled or unqualified. Because I had very comparatively high standards, I expect that everybody should match me in terms of their output. I mean, I would be maybe the first, if not the first, to resume. I'll be the last, if not the last, to resume. I expect my job to be done when I ask for it. I never knew things like close time. I never knew things like weekends. I was practically working Sunday to Sunday. And for a long time, I just couldn't understand how people, you give people jobs to do, and then 2 days later, they've not even started. I can't imagine. So that's the first. The second is now not just about the skill and competence of the manager. It is also the institutional framework within an organization that allows people that are younger to be able to communicate to people that are above them. What do you do when your boss or line manager is the CEO? I mean, I run a startup now. There are people who report to me. To God be the glory for them, if they have disagreement with me. Who do they report me to except God? Okay? And so organizations, I'm telling you, organizations need to put in frameworks that allow people to be people. So that even for people who have power, you give them enough responsibility, or you provide enough responsibility that keeps their power honest. So that even when people, for example, report to me, but they have disgruntlement or disagreement with me, there's a framework that allows them to bring those up so that I can get feedback. A lot of the time, the framework is HR, okay? Or around HR. Or a policy that says that these are the things we won't do. So that even when the boss is contravening, you can tell HR, oh, HR, the boss is doing this, or my line manager is doing this, I need you to give, help me give him feedback. The third one is the responsibility of followers. And I say this because people just think that followers are supposed to be docile, they're supposed to be natural victims, they're not supposed to talk back. It's the workplace, so it's not prison. Even in prison, people revolt.
Yeah.
There's what is called prison break. Even in prison, there's nowhere they can go. They will want to. So you are not supposed to be docile. And so we have a responsibility to keep. I mean, there's a way they say it. They say we need to tell truth to power. We need to keep power honest. We need to let them know. I mean, there was a piece that I wrote to say, it is until the led realize that they are more than the leaders, that's when they will know that the power of the leader was nominated for him. So imagine if not just you, but I mean, the workforce agrees that, I mean, our boss is not doing this right. And if you do it from a constructive perspective to say, there's a thing our boss does that is not right. And I hope that, I mean, my staff will listen to this. Because now that I'm a leader, or now that I'm the one of the most significant leader in my organization, I fear for how my people relate with me. I mean, one of the most terrible things about being a leader is sycophancy around you. You go around, before you make any joke, they laugh. And then they make you feel like you are doing great. And then because of our cultural connotations, they will not be able to tell you if you are goofing, if you are unkind. Some of them will abort those thoughts. But they are worried if they tell you they can lose their job. They are worried that, oh, this our boss is laughing now. He's a bastard. He's not going to allow you. And so, followers have a responsibility to demand honest leadership. From leadership, to put leaders on a podium of responsibility, to give us feedback. Because at the end of the day, leaders are humans. They have problems in their own lives. They have challenges in their own backyard. They are struggling to be good, decent leaders. I mean, many a leader are not by design vindictive. I mean, nobody wants to lead a disgruntled team. What do you get from that? Nobody gets anything from that. You want to lead a high-performing, enthusiastic, happy, jolly team. And so if you are the one who is now corroding your team, making them underperform because of your personality, I mean, I'm sure every leader or every sane leader would desire the feedback to improve his leadership. So I would say those three things are my bucket. You know, let's provide the environment for people to be able to communicate. Let followers be allowed and responsible enough to give feedback. And then leaders themselves need to be trained. Nobody brings this leadership from heaven. All of us are struggling to be better at it.
Yes, you made very valid points, Larry. And one of the things that stood out to me from what you said is the fact that the person is in a leadership position doesn't mean that they have what it takes to be people leaders. And I want to like turn the spotlight away from the questions now to you. And you mentioned some of the things that molded you in your career journey to become what you are today. And you discovered that some of the things you learned and picked up then are not necessarily good for the leadership position you now hold. How did you do it? Are you still in the process? Have you outgrown those things? Are you just going to embody it and say everybody should deal with it? What stage are you currently?
Okay, so, I mean, we must admit that there's no change that is easy. I mean, I started going to the gym early in the year, and every day that I have to go to the gym, I struggle with it. Okay, today I visited the hospital, so I didn't go to the gym, okay. And I was secretly happy that I didn't have to go to the gym.
Wow, even 11
so change is never easy. Change is never easy, and so change is that's what discipline is. Mm. Because today I didn't have to wake up so early, so I woke up, I was on the bed, I was reading. If it's my gym day, I can't read. I have to wake up, get my clothes on, brush my mouth, get ready. And so when you ask me, my experience was not necessarily palatable. So I share the experience a lot of the time. And I share that because people see me as one super smart guy who's got his life figured out. So I like to share my mistakes. Mm-hmm. Because when they see, they will realize that very much like others, people are just people. I watched a video last night by Barack Obama. It was stunning for me. Barack Obama said, when you get to the table of leadership is when you will realize that people are not it. I'd never thought about it. So I downloaded it. I downloaded the video. He said, it is when he became president that he realized that, oh, Harvard, for example, has many smart people, but has very dunce people in Harvard who are teaching. And so, would have thought that, oh, anybody who goes to Harvard and comes out or teaches at Harvard is an excellent person. He says, it is when he became the president of the U.S. that he realized that even Harvard has his own share of idiocy. He says, but not just Harvard. When he goes to G7 meeting, this is the top seven nations in the world, that even leaders of nations have their own share of stupidity and idiocy as much as they are smart people. I said, wow. So it is when you get to the table, you realize that there's a democracy in this idiocy thing. Everybody can be an idiot. And so it's the same with leadership. People assume that because you've been working for 10 years, you know and you have become. It's not the same. So it was this year that I started looking at people on Twitter differently. I mean, before, I'm talking about Nigerian Twitter. It used to be about petty scandals around relationships and maybe somebody defrauding somebody. This year was the first time I saw people in their 40s, 50s messing up. Big time. I mean, arguing, exposing their families to ridicule. So I was asking question. I was asking one of my proteges that, I thought when you got to 40, you should automatically have brains. And then it occurred to me that age is not a measurement for wisdom. Just the same way experience is not a measurement for competence. It's not that you have been in an office or an official role for 20 years does not even mean you know anything. Okay? What do you need to do to be in an official role for 20 years? It's just to ensure that you are not sacked. That's all. Some people, they don't even need to promote them. Just ensure you are not sacked. And so if somebody is not sacked, after 20 years, he will have experience for 20 years. Even if he was getting promoted, even if he was meeting his target, because his target could be sell something, it doesn't mean that he's actually growing. So when they ask you, what does somebody need to grow? He simply does not need to die. If you don't die, you are growing. That's the assumption. But when it comes to experience, how we are evolving, we need to ask ourselves, what is influencing your evolution? So I will answer mine, which is the question you asked. For me, it is a lot of introspection, a lot of training, a lot of conflict. And I can give many examples around this. The first one that I said was introspection. So in 2018, 2019, I had somebody work with me, okay? And this guy was unusually sloppy. I don't suffer fools gladly. I already told you I'm the first person to resume in the office. About 5:30 a.m., I'm on my seat. And I won't leave the office until like 8, 9. I love to get to the office very early. I'm an early starter, right? And I don't like to talk in the morning. This guy will come to the office terribly late. So I went to a training in Kenya. It was a leadership training that was conducted then by one of my officers. And at the training, they were talking about the influence of leadership on a team. So when the trainer was there, he was talking about the leaders that are remembered and how the leaders that are remembered are influential on the lives and career of the people that they lead. So I stood up and I disagreed with him. I said, no. I hold very strong opinions, by the way. I said, no. I said, my most memorable leader was the one that suffered me most. Because, and the reason why I was rebelling is, people think that the only type of leadership that work is the people, cuddly, emotional, positive leader. And I said, no. For me, the most impactful leader for my career was the one who suffered me greatly. Okay? So, and then there were many people in the room who really agreed with me. So my head was all up. I was like, I got this guy. So the guy was looking at me like this guy was just scattering the class, right? But the guy asked us to, in the manual, training manual that he gave us, he asked us to write some changes we will make in our team, okay, when we get home. So I wrote in my manual that this guy, I was going to change the way I relate to him. I was going to get involved in his life, and I was going to try to get to know him better. So this guy that was going to come to office late, was going to leave the office without telling me, was not going to do his job, I got involved. So I asked him about himself. I asked him about his wife. I asked him what else he was doing. And then the big question, I asked him, what exactly does he want to do? So then he was working for me. He was in charge of marketing, graphics and all. So he told me that he wanted to get into business and manage a team. I said, okay. So we had something we're doing then. We're trying to run a campaign to hire agent. So I gave him this job to do. This guy became the most exceptional staff in a few weeks in the company till I left. Hmm. He was working so hard. He was actually using his money to drive the office output, his own money. He believed so much in what he was doing that his performance was exceptional. But before this time, we would always argue. And I was giving him hell. I mean, this was me. But that day, I just thought about, maybe I should try this thing. And he walked to me like magic. And then I realized that really, a lot of the time, anybody can change. And a lot of the time, the people who you think that they are useless, they are useless because they are rebelling. It's you. It's the personality. They are rebelling at you. It's not like they are useless. They are just resisting you. That's number one. Let me share one more, and then maybe we'll go to the next one. The next one was, I joined this company. I mean, I can talk about it, InterSwitch, in the year 2020. And so when I joined InterSwitch, I was just there for like 2 years. Sorry, I was there for 2 weeks before COVID started, so everybody was locked down. So I joined a team within InterSwitch where it was a large team, a team of more than 70 people across 3 or 4 continents. So I had teams in Nigeria, I had teams in Europe, I had teams in Asia. All of them reported to the business who reports to me. But the big issue was that I just joined a team who they didn't know me. So we had to work virtually. So it was hard. And then one of the guys, I always tell this story. There's a way that I know how to lead. And my way is almost authoritarian. I only know how to lead by giving you, do this, do this, do this. That was the only way, right? Mm-hmm. So I tell people to do this. And then InterSwitch was the first place I got where I'll ask people to do stuff. They will not argue. They just won't do it. Now, in my career, if I asked you to do stuff and you don't do it, I mean, I cannot only just give you a query. You can lose that job. And that's all I had ever known. So when I give you a job, you don't have an opinion. You get it done. But in InterSwitch, it was alarming for me because for the first time, I had a large team who reported to me, but they were not under obligation to me. So I was in a shock. This was a culture shock. I'd never seen this before. So I had a boss then. He's one of the most exceptional person I've worked with. His name is Akeem Lawal. I was always conflicting with Akeem. When I go to him, I'm like, boss, I don't understand this. I mean, I asked these people to do 1, 2, 3, and I'm not reporting my team to him. I was just having a conversation to him that how can I be their leader and I'll give them job and they won't do it immediately. So he was always telling me, Larry, there's a new way to work. And I said, no, boss, there's no new way. Because in this company, if I can give instruction and people don't follow my instruction, this is not, what's it called? What do I used to call it? This is not a recipe for success. I used to call it like that. And he was always telling me, guy, there's a different way to work. So, but of course, I was banging heads and I was conflicting. That's why I said a lot of conflict. And then one day, I had a major conflict. I was in a meeting with a customer. I called one of my guys. So what's the status? What's going on? So the guy talked quietly. And then afterward, the guy called me. I think he called me. And he said, Larry, so I don't like how you call me up in meetings asking me to speak. I've never heard it before in my life.
He shocked you.
My day shocked me. He said, I don't like the way you call me up in meetings. If you know you are going to call me up in meetings, you need to give me advance notice so that I can prepare myself. Okay? Because if you call me next time, I won't speak. This was somebody that reported to me. So I was mad. So when I caught the call, I was boiling. And then I was thinking of what I can do to this guy. And then he occurred to me that there's nothing I can do to him. I can't sack him. Okay.
Now,
and then if I make...
I felt very painful that, no, I need to get back at you.
I'm telling you, I can't sack him because this is an organization. And that's why I said organizations need to put in framework that allows people to be protected. All right?
Yeah.
So I can't sack him. But worst of all is that if I was wise, I cannot make enemy of him. It was one of the guys that will deliver the success that I craved. So I didn't reply. And then around 5 in the evening, this thing happened around 10 a.m. Around 5 in the evening, my anger had calmed down. So I sent him an SMS. I said, guy, I am sorry. I apologize. I didn't do anything. No. I apologize. Wow. I said, guy, I'm sorry. Yeah. I said, because I need you to succeed, I don't want us to disagree. I want us to work together because without you, I cannot win. And then he became one of my closest friends. He visited me in my house. He's a Muslim. He sent me salaam. He became one of the most dependable guys in the team. But if that conflict did not happen, I will not reflect enough to know that I now need to change my perspective. So before, I used to just give instructions. After COVID, when people returned to the office, I worked in a large division where we had about 150 workforce. When I get to the office, I drop my bag on my seat, and the first thing that I do is to go around hugging, greeting about 100 people.
Wow.
When people were asked to give feedback, I became one of the most renowned leaders. When I left into Switch, I had 3 Sanford parties because I became everybody's friend. This guy alone, and I was maybe the first person who did that. This guy alone triggered in me the need to now pay attention to people and not just give them instruction. Go, 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 go. So I'm going to go to them and ask them, how are you? I now know them so well. I know the person who supports Chelsea. I know the person who supports Man. You have a small chat about Chelsea. I know the guy who is an APC guy. I'll have a small chat about the president. I'll have a small chat about LP, Labour Party. I became so much involved that when I tell them to jump, the only thing they will ask me is, boss, how far? My team became the highest performing team in the division because this guy helped me by stirring a conflict that would have been a difficult conversation, but it turned out very productive for me. So, I mean, those are some of my experiences.
Yes. Those were profound experiences. And you need to experience it before you know how it works, sincerely. And from some of the things you've mentioned, I don't know if you can pinpoint some skills, some specific skills, like put a name to some specific skills that helped you to manage some of these relationships, to become the best leader, leader that you have become today. What are the specific skills somebody has to develop?
Yeah, so I would say maybe the first and often the best is emotional intelligence. And I say that because even me, so I train about emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence has 5 pillars, okay? Self-awareness, self-management, relationship management, social interaction, and then the last one is empathy. Usually with emotional intelligence, you find that you are good in some, you are weak in the others. For me, my weakest as a person is empathy. I just don't know how to feel what others are feeling. And it's not like I'm an evil person. I just don't know. I mean, I gave examples at the training that you met me. I don't know. Before, when I have job in my head, I just give it to people. It never occurred to me that I should ask them good morning. I mean, how was getting to the office? I was just not as emotionally smart as I was cognitively smart. I mean, people think that I'm a brilliant person. And I believe that I am. Eh? But emotionally, I just even didn't know that people were hurting. I just didn't know. And so as I started trying to improve my emotional intelligence, it got improved. I mean, it's not great, though. Even now, it's not great. I struggled greatly. I was telling somebody last week that I had a staff, she no longer works with me, who I gave hell one day this year. Okay, so with work, I forgive everything else except attitude. I forgive performance. I forgive contribution. I mean, nobody can. I mean, you are not in charge of everything. The only thing I cannot forgive is performance. So if I give you first job to do, you say you've forgotten. I give you instruction, you say you can't remember. Honestly, this honest feedback, I just ran agog. And immediately after that session, I realized, oh, Larry, you had gone overboard. And then I started sending her text in the afternoon. I said, I'm really very sorry. I'm very sorry that I came across as hard as I did. But I'm not just happy that we're not performing. I'm very disappointed at the way you are behaving. Now, this is the way I should have expressed myself earlier. But I didn't express myself like this. I'm not going to kid. I was giving her a piece of my mind. And so emotional intelligence allows me to realize, no, Larry, at times it is reactive. It's not proactive. At times, I would have gone above board before I realized, oh, I messed up. Ah, no, I shouldn't do this. And then I try to go back to mend fences. And I don't get it right every time. But if you are good with emotional intelligence, you know how to manage people. Because there are people that you need to give hot for them to do more. There are people who you just need to give them room, space. And then they realize, oh, I've disappointed the boss. There are people who you need to give query, document your disappointment, and they are going to change. But you wouldn't know all this if you are not emotionally smart. So emotional intelligence is great. The next one I'll say is communication. And when I talk about communication, I try to tell people that communication is not just about eloquence. Because people think that, oh, great communicators are orators. It's not necessarily so. In fact, I think that one of my most notable strengths is that when it comes to communicating, verbal communication, I can be very weak. This is why. My brain thinks very fast. My mouth talks even faster. That is not a good combination when you lead people. Okay? So, and I gave this example. A few years ago, I was at a meeting. I just joined a company. So I'd ask the whole business team and the whole marketing team to come in. I was going to have a meeting with them. So about 20 people were in the conference room. So I'm like, guys, we're going to change stuff. We're going to make a difference, blah, blah, blah. And I was telling them, guys, what we need to do is, as marketing people, we need to support the salespeople. Because an average salesperson is not a smart person. They don't have time for this. You just need to give them stuff to. I said this. Huh. And I didn't think I did anything. I'm like, an average salesperson. I am a salesperson. But what I meant was that a salesperson is on the road. You simply need to give them the tools they need so that they can go and work. You don't want to give them, you don't want a salesperson to be developing new proposals, to be developing solutions. No, that's a business person's job. But a salesperson, they are very functionally capable. Just give them what they need to sell and they go sell. And I use the word, salespeople are not generalized. And in that meeting, we had maybe 8 salespeople. And they didn't complain. But that was my biggest scandal in the company. And so when I say communication is something you need to improve, this day, so I was at a executive leadership training at Lagos Business School last year. And I was telling them that the most difficult thing about my job is communication. And people were surprised because they think that, oh, Larry, you speak so well. I said, you know why? Because every day when I talk with my team, I have to find many other ways to say the things I want to say in a way that won't offend people. That is hard. And I have a broad vocabulary. I read 5 hours every day for the last almost 30 years. I read every day. I was at the hospital today. I took a book. I was reading, so I read. But the fact that I have to struggle to find easy, relatable, cordial, beautiful language to say the things that I want, even when I'm angry, is a big job. I'd say, oh, instead of me saying, I'm sorry. I was at a meeting recently where I wanted to say, can you please shut the F up? Because I was really, really pissed off. But I cannot express myself. So I have to say, you know what? I'm disappointed. I don't want to be in this meeting anymore. I need to leave. Now, I do this even though as a leader, I know that even that is wrong. I need to be able to manage my disappointment. But I knew that if I remained in that meeting, I would say things that even me, I'm not proud of. And so, learning how to improve your communication, how to communicate anger without necessarily being angry, how to communicate disappointment, how to communicate when you are less than pleased with people without necessarily pushing them away. Because like they say in my tribe, okay, I mean, no wise person throws the baby and the bathwater away. Even if you want to sack somebody, you shouldn't let their last memories of you be this evil, unkind person. Nobody wants that. And so, improving communication, even for me, is hard when I have to communicate and say, we can do better. When what I want to say is, I mean, there was a time I made this feedback, and I'm sure you're going to laugh. So I was with my team when I was at InterSwitch. This was in the early days. And I said, these mistakes that we're making, they're schoolboy mistakes. That even schoolboys don't make this kind of mistakes.
Wow.
And then people are like, is even saying that we're like secondary schoolboys. But these are nonsense cliches that are in my head that you have to find a way to make and say, these mistakes, we shouldn't be making them. These are basic mistakes. Now, basic mistake does not even communicate my disappointment. Those are really, really schoolboy errors. But if you are telling people who have used 10 years, 8 years to work, and you are telling them they are making schoolboy errors, it goes deep down to their psyche, to their memory, and they think that this guy doesn't have regard for them. And they will never give you their loyalty or commitment. So improving communication is like juju. You need to improve it. Okay? And maybe the third one, since I'm giving three feedback, you know? Since I'm giving three feedback, is the one I will really, really say I've improved the most is people relationship. So I told you that I could get to the office for 5:30 a.m. I'm a very early morning person. Now, in the morning, I don't like to talk to people. I mean, when I got married, it was strange for my wife. Because when I wake up, I don't want to talk. Why? Because the morning is the best time for inflection in my mind. So I want to think. And I want to read. I don't want to talk. And then my wife said, guy, you're not a bachelor anymore. You're married. We have to talk. So I will beg her, please, you know what? If I could, I mean, I don't want to talk, blah, blah, blah. Now, when I started working, it became the same. Because now, when I get to the office in the morning, I also don't want to talk. I want to respond to my emails overnight. I want to start my work early so that from morning to maybe 10 or 12, I would have done the work and then I'll focus on people. It took me a while to realize that as a boss, the most important job you have is the people, not your job. It took me a while. And so what I do is that the first 1 hour in a day, I don't have any work except it's emergency. So at InterSwitch, usually at every job I've done, I typically have my own office. At InterSwitch, we the leaders had our office separate from the troops. I'm the only one that does not resume to my office for almost all the time I was there. So I go and sit with my people. And we're only just catching up on work, catching up on gist, catching up on people. It was the best thing about my experience in InterSwitch, because it taught me to pay attention to people. That was how it became that I was the only guy in leadership, in management, in my division, who knew everything about every team in my team. I could speak to what is going on the engineering team. I could speak to the QA. I could speak to the project. I could speak to the product. I could speak to the service manager. I could speak to everybody because I was going to sit with them. I'm the only leader that does not ever sit in my office. And then in an average day, my team will come to my office maybe 12, 15 times. Boss. So I'll go there. Guy, Alpha, what's going on? What's this? What's the problem? Can I solve it? Okay, let me help you solve it. That's how people will not even speak to their line manager. If they have a problem, they'll come directly to me because I became accessible. It took me a while to realize that just connecting with people and helping them to navigate their own challenges could be the most important job you would do as a leader. So, I mean, those are the three most important skills, I would say. People skill, communication skill, you know, that one in particular. I can't remember the last thing I said, emotional, but those things are really, really wonderful. Emotional intelligence, that they will help you leverage your leadership and they will help you become much, much better. So that when you have to have those difficult conversations, and you will, it becomes much easier to have. I mean, there was somebody who I was so annoyed with, I wanted us to move him away from the team. And then everybody in the team kept complaining, and then I wanted us to fire him, but we couldn't fire him. And then I didn't bother much because, I mean, it was not... The team were managing with that. Then after a while, he got into some trouble and he had to be fired. When he was going to be fired, I was calling him. I said, guy, they're going to fire you, but I have 1, 2, 3, 4 ideas about how to help you. Okay? Eventually, he didn't take the help, so he had to leave. When he left, he was calling me and said, boss... He wasn't reporting directly to me, but he had to call me and say, boss, I mean, nobody likes to be fired. He needs that exit to be downgraded so that he gets a much better arrangement in another job. His mom called me, his dad called me, and I was organizing how to help him, because now people see that you're actually fighting their battles. They see it, because really, I mean, like I said, there's no boss that is born a bastard that doesn't want to help people. I mean, nobody, even me, that people thought, oh, Larry is difficult. I mean, I want my people happy so that they will do my job well. Okay. So and so when you connect with them on a personal, emotional level, before, I mean, my favorite pastime is reading. I said so. Nobody reads with anybody else. So my best times is when I'm dating myself. I'm with my books. Right? But later I had to start paying attention to, you need to now go out to visit people's homes. When it is their holidays, greet them, send them messages, ask them about their wife and kids. I started paying attention to that, because when you are invested in their lives, then they realize, okay, so maybe this guy really, really cares about us. And then they want to do way more for you. So that's my little experience on the question.
Your little, not so little experience. That's a lot of experience, actually. Yeah. And know what I think sometimes when I hear coaches, or maybe career coaches or leadership coaches talk about this thing, it sounds so real. It sounds like maybe they're just sweet, like only coaching is like, it's not that easy, like, to manage people like that. But you sharing all you have to do from your experience, it makes it more realistic. And I thank you for being vulnerable, right, talking about it. So I think we should move from there to, you know, we're talking about having difficult conversations. I want to ask, is it possible to prevent having difficult conversations?
Is not. Factually, functionally, naturally, is not. In my tribe, they say when two brothers go in every time and come back smiling, they have not given themselves appropriate feedback. Yeah, that's it. Okay. I wrote a piece. I have a team who work with me, and then we write every week. I think the piece last week on my LinkedIn was about the line between friendships and colleagues at work. There are some people who are so into themselves, they form friendship, but they don't know how to keep the lines and stay colleagues. And so when you befriend somebody too much, that you can't give them feedback, you will not help them grow. And then two of you will, over time, degrade in your output. And so if you are not able to have difficult or frank conversations, even with your partner, if you were married or if you were in a relationship, I mean, that relationship is headed for the rocks. It's the same. So the only way you will not have difficult conversation is if you are in a relationship that does not matter. If it doesn't matter, I mean, like this casual relationship everybody has online, where everybody is just fine and happy. Oh, that's great. Oh, you're looking good today. That's okay. But a real life relationship that matters, there will be need for you to give feedback about people's, and the feedback is not necessarily, I mean, I'll give you an idea and I'll share this. So I got married. Before I got married, I'd been single for a while. Those are the most difficult guys to marry because they have been comfortable with being alone. Okay? So when you get married to them, they feel like you are a discomfort in their perfect life. Okay? Because they've been used to being single. It happened to me. I don't celebrate birthdays. And then when I got married, my wife was, you're going to celebrate. I'm like, no, I don't. She said, no, you're married now. I said, no, but when it's on my birthday, I only go out with myself and I like to think. So I'm having a date with myself. I don't like people even telling me happy birthday. I don't like it. So imagine that kind of person. And then 1 year after we got married, we had a disagreement. The first one. After 1 year. And then my wife was, guy, we need to talk. And I said, no. So, backstory. When I like or respect someone, when they disappoint me, I can't express myself. Because when I'm angry, I don't trust the kind of stuff that I say. So that day I was pissed. So I said, no, I cannot talk. And then she said, no. That she's so angry that she needs to talk. I said, no, I can't talk. Because the things I will say will be much worse. And then she was so angry, and then she went to sit down, and then she sent messages to me that I don't get what you're doing. I told you I want to talk. You're not allowing me to talk. And then I realized wonderfully that I can actually chat when I'm angry. That's the first day I realized. In fact, when I'm angry is when I write the best emails. Okay? Like if I'm angry at you, I write the best email. I'm going to dot my I's, cross my T's. I will write the best because I know how to be angry professionally. I can compose. You know, I know that I cannot let my emotions display itself while I'm writing. So I won't say you are mad. No. I say, okay, I mean, I carefully. So I realized I could. So I was chatting her. Okay. And that for me was when I realized that, okay, there's a middle ground. I can give feedback. She can give me feedback too. She realized that she was happy to talk immediately when she was angry or disappointed with me, and that has saved us. I mean, when we married 11 years next month, we've never had to have issues where we externalize, I mean, maybe once or twice, but we know what to do. Because there are times when you give feedback, oh, that thing you just did, I'm disappointed. Oh, that thing you just did, I don't like it. And then we can give, but there will be times for difficult conversation, unless that relationship doesn't matter to you. If it does, I mean, you can't run away from it. You would have to.
So we can't avoid it. So everyone has to be prepared for it. So I think we can round up with this. This has been a very interesting conversation. From your interaction with people or consulting or helping them to introspect and see where they get things wrong, what are the ways people have approached difficult conversations that are not the ideal? Because sometimes people just feel that it's right now to do it, and they do it. And if they look at their result over the years, it will seem as if it is yielding the right result. So they will be like, if it is not broken, so why fix it? So this part of the conversation, I want you to like say some of these ways that people approach difficult conversations that are not the ideal. Might give you the results you want, but are not the ideal. So when leaders listen to this, they are able to see, oh, I'm getting it wrong in this aspect. I need to fix up.
I'll say the first one is people will feel like they need to say their mind. You know, they say, I need to give him a piece of my mind. My pastor used to say that the only person who has a right to give a piece of their mind is the person whose mind is born again. And there's nobody's mind who is born again. All of us have to renew our minds, right? Yeah. So people will feel like they should say what in their mind. I mean, I don't know about people, but me, I'm not even proud of my mind. I'm not. The things in my mind, I'm not even proud of it. So if I say my mind to anyone, I get disappointed that I've done that. I disappoint myself. Okay? And so what should you do is to maybe address the issue and not say your mind. because my mind is not saved at all. My mind is such a gutter place when I'm disappointed and angry. And so just addressing the issue, you've not been performing well, I'm disappointed, I expect improved performance, doing 1, 2, 3, 4, okay? I think it helps rather than you throwing out your mind, because if you are like me, there's no way you say your mind and you heal that person or you heal that relationship. Eh? Mm. So, I'll say that's the first one. Number two is to be emotionally intelligent, like I said earlier. And because some people, I'll give this story, and I think I shared it the last time we met. Okay, maybe there's not a lot of time, but let me share the story. There are some people who, talking to them is the best way to give them feedback. But there are others who, not talking at all is the best feedback. Just drawing back from them. There are some people who, public whooping, that's what we call it, where you raise them up publicly and you let them know how disappointed you are. And they want to respond, because publicly also they want to respond to that disappointment. And there are some people who you will publicly scold and you will lose them for life, because their esteem will go with it and they will hate you for life. But how do you know who this is? It's over time, by connecting to them, by watching out for them, by seeing how they act and react when the issues are small. There are some people who, I have a daughter, my daughter, when she does anything, she comes to show me, "Oh, daddy, see what I'm wearing." So I say, "Oh, you're amazing." When she answers a very simple question like 4 + 4, she says, "Hey," I'm like, "You're amazing." She needs that reinforcement a lot. My son is not like that. My son thinks that academics is chicken change. It doesn't even need recognition. But my daughter wants to be validated every time. And so if you know that that person needs to be validated, you have to be aware that you don't publicly scold that person, because that's, you might lose that person.
Mm. Mm.
Particularly because that person wants your validation. But there's my son who, he doesn't care much. If you scold him, he feels like, well, you've done it, and he can move on from it. So it is emotional intelligence that helps you see that people are different like this. And so you deal with them separately. Okay? That is number two. Number three thing I will say, which is what people can do, is, self-inflection. There are times when you will not be smart enough or wise enough to be prepared, to be wise, to say the right thing in the right way at the right time. But even when you've messed up, it would be nice for people to know that you can claw back. So my type of person, my identity, is that I like people to see me for who I think I am. So a lot of the time, I ask people, when you go to churches, is it not interesting that pastors never really tell us about their struggle? Okay? The first time my pastor told me that, he told us, we had a leaders meeting, that he has been broke, and that there are times when he still get broke. That I think he was recently, he had about 700,000 in his account. And that time I had about 1.4 million in my account. I'm like, really? I even have more money than my pastor. Wow. That simple talk made me realize that he's actually regular like myself.
Mm.
Now, leaders need to make themselves vulnerable. They need to let... some people feel like leadership is being impregnable, that you cannot make mistakes. And so, even when you are making mistakes, people think that you are deliberately hurting them.
Mm.
When at times, you are just making mistakes. And so, when you make your followers know that you are not impregnable, you are not infallible, that you are also... I tell the people that I work with, I said, I've never been a CEO before. I've been vice president at InterSwitch. I've been country marketing and business officer in different... I've been different roles, but this is the first time I'm CEO of an organization. I've been MD of a one-man, two-man company. But I've not been CEO of a big organization. So this CEO thing, I'm sorry, I'm navigating it too. This is my learning time. And so I will make some mistakes. So please, you need to forgive me. And when I identify the mistake, I come to you, please forgive me, because this is first time for me also. And I think leaders need to position as that too, to let their people see that they are leaders but they are also people, and that when they make mistake, they shouldn't be afraid or ashamed to apologize. They shouldn't be worried about being vulnerable to their people. They shouldn't... this thing that I told you about the InterSwitch story, I've told it many times in different meetings at InterSwitch. The guy has been in the meeting many times. He's always laughing when I tell the story. That's the truth. You let people know that this leadership, you are learning it differently, and that your commitment is to constantly improve. People will give you room when they know that you are honest. They will forgive you. They will forgive you. There was a guy that I gave a piece of my mind. He used to work with me. He's now in Canada. I gave him a rough feedback. And then afterwards, the drama with me is that when I give that kind of feedback, the next moment I've forgotten. Remember what I talked about, empathy? So when he was about to relocate to Canada and we're having send forth, so they were asking him, what's your experience about working with Larry? He says, working with Larry was exceptional. That there was a day I gave him so much hell that he was thinking that things will never be the same. But that after that hell, that he remembered Larry kept giving him job, Larry kept buying him meals, that I was wondering, is he not the same guy that was going to kill me the other day? Okay. The truth is, when they realize that you are honest, even when you have very difficult conversations or very unpleasant circumstances, they give you room. Just like you yourself, you give them room. When they mess up and disappoint you, you give them the feedback, but you also pull them back because they are humans. Everybody makes mistakes. Okay, so I think they will give you consideration. And maybe the last thing I would say is, people are people at the end of the day. I mean, they might not be good at their job. Some people are not good at their job. They might have a terrible attitude. Some people have stinking attitude. Okay, they might not be great people. I mean, some of the best performing people, type A personalities, are actually the worst team players. Almost naturally. Yes, because they are good at their job. In fact, it feels like God designed it that way for some reason. The people who are functionally very brilliant, they are, you see them, they are type A's. They are typically slave drivers. They don't know how to connect with people. But you have to understand that people are people, and that the most valuable resource in this world are human beings. And so, when you are desperate to pursue revenues and profit, which is not bad because that's why a company is in business, remember that the people who will make you achieve it are people. When you are trying to deliver a customer's project, that is not bad, but remember the people that will deliver it are people. When you are trying to build an organization that will be respectful and will make a lot of impact, remember that people that will drive it are people. The most valuable thing you have is not the brand name. It's not the money you are making. It's not the customer you are pleasing. It's not the investor who has put money in. They are the people who fight with you side by side every day. And you have to pay attention to them. You have to understand that they are as valuable, if not more valuable, than whatever target, whatever objective that you have. And that if you continue to pay attention to them and focus on them, they will go to the ends of the earth and back for you. I mean, that's what I believe.
That's amazing. That's amazing. That would have been a good place to end. But I'm thinking you should also draw something for employees, because I understand that this conversation is for managers, is for people leaders. But I'm hoping we can drop one or two things for people that are still employees, that are subordinate. If there's a need to have difficult conversations with their superiors, how should they approach it in the best way?
Okay, I mean that's brilliant. Thank you. I think that many of the things I've said cut across. So when I say people should have emotional intelligence, I'm also talking about subordinates. Okay, when people talk to subordinates, they talk down at them. I talk them up. Okay. So I was telling somebody over the weekend that today was the tomorrow we talked about yesterday. 20 years ago, I was telling myself and my friends that when we finish from the university, 20 years from now, I'll be married to Tyra Banks. I will live in a 20-acre property. Well, 20 years have come now. Tyra Banks doesn't even know that I exist. Aha. So the guy who is boss today was follower yesterday. Mm-hmm. And if you don't talk yourself up, you will be a terrible leader. And then you'll be a victim even as a follower. Mm. So imagine that your boss is a project you have to manage. Study him or her and find the doorway to his head and to his heart. I tell people about emotional intelligence. There are some people who are simply emotionally intelligent, but they are functionally incompetent and they continue to get promoted. Mm. People say, oh, no, their boss bought Kisa, they are do eye service, whatever you want to call it, because they simply understand how to unlock the minds and emotion of their boss. They don't need, some of them are just incompetent, but they continue to get promoted. How much more you that you now know your job? So pay attention to your boss. This your boss is maybe the most important person after God that is going to be responsible for your professional advancement. Even if you pray, God will still use him. Unless God will blind him on the day he's supposed to appraise you. So if you don't know how to pay attention to your boss, and let me tell you what I mean by pay attention to your boss. I work with young people, right? And when I talk to young people, I tell them about, I use stories that can teach them the concept. And I say, nobody teaches us how a young guy should talk to a young girl. Nobody. Mm-hmm. But if you're trying to date a girl or you like a girl, you'll move around the babe. You won't tell her first, or you'll be watching her. Whatever the girl goes, you want her to see you around that place. And then you hear the babe says, oh, I don't like guys that smoke. Even if you're a smoker, you are going to drop the smoking around that time. Says, and I don't like guys that talk so loud. When you come around that, you reduce your voice. Hi, my name is Charles. They say, oh, I don't like guys who do not comb their hair. That time you have low cut. Nobody tells us those things. Because you want the girl, you adjust your life for the girl. How much more your boss? So some people, I have people who work with me today. When people talk to me, I like them to be focused on the subject matter. Because I don't have enough time. I mean, I was at an interview on Saturday and somebody called me and said, good afternoon, Mr. Lion Rewaju. How are you doing today? I hope your day is... I'm like, what is all this? What is all this thing?
You're trying to... I'm like, what is all this nonsense? You're doing an icebreaker.
I'm like, please, can you go to what you want to say? Because I'm engaged right now. I mean, I don't even like it. I think it's patronizing for you to be acting like you know me. You don't know me. You're asking, good morning, Mr. Lion. What's Mr. Lion Rewaju? You don't even know me. You are calling my full name. What's all this patronizing? Huh? Now, this is me. But some people will love to be patronized. Some people will want you to connect with them and ask about their family. Me, don't ask about my family. Is not your family. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. Just tell me the work and go. Now, if you are not intelligent enough to know how I consume information, how I love to work during the morning and I don't like to talk, and how I love my emails to be functionally brief and not storytelling, you'll be frustrating me every time you work with me. So if a young 17-year-old boy can pay attention to that girl he likes, why can't you pay attention to your boss? To understand how your boss is structured for you to work better. And it's the same with not just emotional intelligence, it's things like feedback, giving them feedback. It's things like wearing them in their... Remember what I talked about leaders, that leaders should be more empathetic. We should be empathetic of our leaders. I mean, this last month was so challenging for us as an organization that I was wondering where we're going to make all the money we're hoping to get. You won't believe it. We had our biggest deal since our company has been in existence on the last day of October. Now think about it. Think about it. Think about the anxieties leading to that day. So, if anybody works with me and they are being sloppy, knowing that we are doing poorly with revenues, do you know how disappointing that will be for me if you really don't know that we're not doing well with revenues and then you're not helping me to win? It will be crazy. And so people who work with leaders should also empathize with the leaders. The leaders are human beings. They're under unbelievable pressure. So we need to understand what they are going through and seek to help them perform better. Because it is until you do that, you just keep saying that leader is a bastard, is a wicked guy. But the guy really too won't care because he has unbelievable pressure. I mean, see, all my team member will simply say, oh, sir, please, when are you going to pay salary? That's all they know. They really don't care if we are making enough money for me to even pay their salary. Okay? I mean, I don't mean that my people do not care. I'm saying some people, they don't care that, oh, it's just salary. And so when you understand that the pressure these guys face is more likely than not, is the pressure that helps put the business on track, you would empathize. You will understand the guy and put in work to support him. I mean, that's what I think.
Thank you very much for that, Larry. That's really profound. And yeah. I love that we've been able to address both sides of the divide. And I'm sure anyone listening to this would get awesome and solid points that would help them even as they go on in their interactions in their workplace. Thank you very much, Larry. I don't know if you have anything you want to plug in at this point.
I mean, first is to say thank you. Thank you for invite. I really enjoyed doing this because this is like my own side passion where I work with young professionals, young adults generally, to prepare them for world of work and also to prepare them for entrepreneurship. So this is exciting for me, and I want to say thank you. And yes, I mean, like I said, I lead Optimus AI. Our leading product is Ziki. Ziki is a learning management platform for students. And I asked them to check it up at www.ziki.ai. I'm sure if you have a kid or a cousin or a niece or a nephew in secondary school, Ziki will be exceptional for them. Thank you very much for the invite. I'm thrilled to be here.
Thank you very much. And that's a wrap. And thank you for listening to today's episode. For more workplace-related content, head over to techpointafrica.com/subject/work. All other relevant links will be included in the show notes. Don't forget to share your comments and suggestions by reaching out to us at mwc@techpoint.africa.